It started really because the government spotted that a lot of descriptive science was being done to, if you like, describe what the impacts of a changing climate would be. And we were set up to help people use that sort of research because it was being published and other scientists were reading it, but nobody was actually doing anything useful with it. So we were set up to coordinate that research and provide some sort of integration. And we set about doing that. And what guided us at the beginning was doing the research, but led by stakeholders rather than led by the scientists. And we did that. And it paralleled what was happening in my career when I was administering science from a research council, where there's a lot of interest in who gets the money to do the research. But the question of what the society does with the research, it is still quite neglected. And I was really interested in that. So we are at that other end of the research process. What happens to the research? But we realised it wasn't enough just to help people absorb that descriptive information about what the impacts might be. We also needed to help them start to plan what they were going to do with that information. So we moved from impact description to encompass adaptation as well. And at the time, adaptation was very much the poor relation of reducing greenhouse gases. And it's like the difference between medicine and public health. And quite clearly, you need that public health approach to deal with the causes of climate change, but actually you have to administer medicine as well to deal with the symptoms. And so we're that medical response to climate change, accepting we've got to reduce emissions, but also we need to deal with the changes that are already in the pipeline and that are going to happen in the future. So that's how we sort of came into being. And adaptation gradually moved up the agenda, both nationally and internationally, as it was recognised that whatever we did for mitigation, we needed to adapt as well. I think we have moved on quite a way from telling people about the science. It's a strange thing. If you want people to deal with climate change, you immediately pull them out of their area of knowledge and force them to think about climate science, which is hugely complex. So a few years ago, we made a decision that we would accept the science as it is, the consensus, and not discuss it at our meetings. Other people may discuss it, and if somebody raises an issue, you know, is this really happening? Do we really have to worry about it? We would say, fine, we can discuss this in the pub afterwards. This meeting is thinking about what we do about it. And we've had very few complaints about that approach. And so we're confident that actually there's enough people, certainly among the professional decision makers that we try to influence, that this is an issue that has to be addressed. But actually adapting to a changing climate is a new idea. It's a new thing for lots of people. And therefore, it's quite difficult to get people started. So we started to look at the things that they already do that will lead them into adapting to a changing climate. So in almost every organisation, somebody has the job of looking at risks. So we tend to talk now about climate risks and not climate change. Most businesses have a business continuity approach to nasty things happening. And everybody, even if they only plan for next week, they start to think about planning for the future. There's a huge body of information on how we deal with disasters, both in preparing for those disasters and responding afterwards. So adapting to climate change builds on these other disciplines, but it's still quite new for all of us. So we recognise that it's not enough just to describe the impacts. We actually have to help people through the process of understanding them and responding to them. So we started to develop tools that help people look at their risks. So we have a very simple tool. It's a checklist of common business areas. So nearly every organisation has premises, buildings that they need to make sure are fit for purpose. Everybody has staff who suffer if it gets too hot, who don't get to work if there's floods across roads, things like that. So there's a lot of common business areas we can get people to look at. And we realised that actually forcing people straight out of the box to think about the future is really hard. So we encourage people to look back at the recent past, not to say what the weather was, but what things happened that you had to deal with. So when you get a flood, what goes wrong? What do you do about it? What have you done to make sure that should flooding become more frequent, you don't lose even more than you do now? And that brings people, if you like, it makes them far more able to deal with things because they realise they've actually got skills. They know about their own industry, their own sector, their own area of responsibility and how to manage it. And then you can graft onto that and maybe you could think about a future that isn't the same as today. A lot of the impacts of climate change are going to be more frequent impacts of climate extremes. So once you know how to deal with a climate extreme, a flood event, then you can start to ask the sensible question, well, if these flood events become more frequent, do you still do the same thing or do you need to do something radically different? So if you have a site that gets flooded once every 10, 20 years, maybe you can afford that. If it's going to get flooded every other year, maybe you need to do something different. And so by challenging people, not only with what they already know, but with what we can extrapolate and project for future conditions, just tests them. And they need to ask themselves the question, is what we've already planned adequate, or do we need to change something? My director said to me, it's like the grown-ups have joined in. And for many years, we were sort of standing on the outside shouting at the crowd, saying adaptation is a good idea. And finally, you know, government policy recognises that as well. So the Act has had, a dramatic effect. And we move from the area of this is something you might like to consider to this is something you've actually got to do. And eventually it will become as matter of fact and everyday business as, for example, health and safety is. Everybody's responsibility and it's completely pervasive. But while we're introducing it, while it's something new, we do have to bring it together and separate it into a recognisable unit. But eventually, it will disperse in the way that health and safety is dispersed. Everyone does it. There's no question that you can ignore it. What the government can do is they can set the context. And so if all the utilities are required to address climate change, part of that process will be those utilities will require the same resilience from their suppliers. Similarly, investors may require climate resilience from the companies they want to invest in. And all of these things, they sort of build, they accumulate, and eventually it will not be an option to ignore this issue. So what we would rather say we do is we present different storylines of future possible climates, in the plural, because we have some evidence of really enormous changes, and we have some evidence that the changes are going to be so small we won't notice them. But the bulk of the evidence is in between, that we will have quite a degree of change. But what we don't want people to do is to say that one is the single future to which I'm going to adapt, because there is uncertainty in the projections. It is projection of different futures rather than prediction of one future. So we want people to test their decisions, their plans, against a range of possible futures. And only by doing that do you come up with a decision that's robust to different futures. If we could really predict one future, we would do so. And there's a tendency to think that what we're looking at is predictions. And we're absolutely clear, we're looking at projections of different possible futures. We're quite good at looking at how the climate system behaves. We're even quite good at looking at how a number of natural systems behave. So the water system, the ocean, the atmosphere. And at looking at some of the immediate natural system impacts. So in biodiversity, in water availability, in agriculture. What we're far less good at is thinking, what are the human implications? It's easy enough to project that agricultural output across Africa may decrease, but what's the human consequence of that? And we're even less sure about that than about some of the climate information. Are people going to move? Are they going to stay where they are and cause civil strife? And these are really big, difficult questions. And so it's not just a natural science issue. It is definitely not just an environmental issue. It really does. One person said to me, it's like the operating system. The agriculture, the food supply, the water supply, they're all the programs that run. But basically, there's an operating system under that. And if that's broken, then all of those other systems are at risk. So that human end is really the difficult one. And for our own sort of efforts in the UK, one of the ways this shows up is we need people to be clear about their attitude to risk. How much damage is acceptable? How many people should die during a heat wave? And these are really difficult political questions. And it's not for individuals to try and decide the answer to these. Society as a whole has got to have this debate. How much damage should we accept from flooding? And then very quickly, how much resource should we put into avoiding deaths from flooding, deaths from heat wave? How much resource should we put into future generations? It's not a question for economists, it's a question for society. And I'm constantly reminded that the Victorians put a huge amount of resource into future generations, and we're still benefiting from things the Victorians built. But nowadays, we're building things to last until the economists say they're worthless, which is 25, 30 years. So I think we've got to re-establish we really have a responsibility to future generations.